Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for Tuesday Taoism. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first, I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of the consciousness which created. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your life and your reality by mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you will consider sharing it with others. So we have a few series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sunday. And then I do try to throw in an extra episode here and there once a week, more or less, related to another topic, something having to do with meditation, mindfulness, mental health. That is my background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. We also talk about manifesting. Forgot to leave that out. But we basically bring anything and everything that we can in order to achieve our dreams, reach our goals, and just live an overall happier day-to-day life. So today being Tuesday, we are doing our Tuesday Taoism. And again, for those of you who are new here, Taoism is based on a book called the Tao Te Ching, written 2,500 years ago, give or take a few hundred years, not really sure. There's stories about who wrote this. The popular notion is that one person wrote it, an ancient hermit in China. But others do believe that it was written by multiple philosophers, scholars. Either way, it's a book of just amazing, amazing wisdom, and it really presents just a fascinating philosophy on manifesting, on living in this universe, in our world, and basically living, becoming more aware of ourselves, our own mind, our own consciousness, our own center. We read one chapter every Tuesday. This Tuesday, today, we are up to chapter 61. So we are moving right along. I always like to say every week that this book has been, because it's so old, has been translated hundreds, if not thousands of times. And, translations vary a great deal. Even two translations that are both in English can vary a great deal. And that's because whoever's translating it brings forward their own interpretation. So you could literally pick up two copies by two different authors, both in English, and get completely different meanings out of the passages. So I've been reading from one translation by a gentleman named Stephen Mitchell. I've read multiple translations since I first discovered this book when I was a teenager. And this is the one that has generally been my favorite that I keep coming back to. And this is the one that I'm reading from as I share it with you all who are listening. And I really appreciate the fact that you are listening. So let's go ahead and do this. We're going to read chapter 61 and get into it and talk about it and see what we get out of it for our practice today. All right, so this is chapter 61, Tao Te Ching, translated by Stephen Mitchell. When a country obtains great power, it becomes like the sea. All streams run downward into it. The more powerful it grows, the greater the need for humility. Humility means trusting the Tao, thus never needing to be defensive. A great nation is like a great man. When he makes a mistake, he realizes it. Having realized it, he admits it. Having admitted it, he corrects it. He considers those who point out his faults as his most benevolent teachers. He thinks of his enemy as the shadow that he himself casts. If a nation is centered in the Tao, if it nourishes its own people and doesn't meddle in the affairs of others, it will be a light to all nations in the world. That's the end of the chapter right there. And wow, we're interesting that given some of the things, let me not get too specific, but given some of the things that we hear a lot about lately, here in the U.S. anyway, in politics, really not just in the U.S., but around the world, I think, all the things that we hear in the news, you know, between different countries, different world powers, different politicians, different political ideologies, it's pretty crazy reading this chapter, which is, again, written, you know, 2.5 millennia ago. That we still hear the wisdom of this text ringing through, right? And this tells us, I mean, tells me, I don't know about you, tells me that this is just profound what whoever wrote this, what they were able to tap into, something that seems to be at least for the last 2,500 years, it has remained true, it has remained salient, it has remained current, even though it's so old, right? It's almost like it's timeless, right? It defies time. And it's just incredibly amazing. And I want to touch on a few. This is a longer one, right? Compared to many chapters that I've read, this is a longer one, relatively speaking. And I want to hit on some lines that really, really, really strike me in this particular chapter. Some of the themes that we hear, or one of the, I think, probably the most pronounced, I guess, theme is humility. And again, we see the paradox, the interplay between greatness and humility, right? He makes that reference a few times. He says, when a country obtains great power, it becomes like the sea. All streams run downward into it. And the very next line, the more powerful it grows, the greater the need for humility. So it's when he uses that specific word, run downward, right? We get this sort of, I don't know if the right word is inflection, but we get this feeling, this sense of subservient, like serving, being under, right? Downward into it. It puts itself below others, right? And it says all streams run downward into it. And then to make it even clearer, he says the more powerful it grows, the greater the need for humility, right? Again, we're hearing that theme of bowing, of serving others, of being humble, right? And one of the things that you do hear, not in this specific chapter, but you do hear in other chapters throughout this book, is that why is the Tao great? Because it doesn't call itself great, right? It's always serving. It never calls attention to itself. It always gives away, right? The movement of the Tao is to yield. The movement of the Tao is to nourish. The movement of the Tao is you can never see it, right? That's something we've talked about here quite a few times, right? Both in Taoism, in Zen, which we often talk about, right? In our Zen stream on Sundays. We talk about how concepts like, and they're not really like an ultimate reality, of course, they're not concepts, that's the whole point, but when in language, when we talk about these things, we conceptualize them, right? Just by default, we do, because we're talking about them. So when we conceptualize things like the Tao, we conceptualize things like Zen, right? We're already missing the mark, which I've talked a whole lot about. But the point is that for sake of language, when we talk about those things that as concepts, one of the characteristics that we often mention is that those things, whatever they are, they never call attention to themselves, right? And you hear and you see this theme appearing in this particular chapter. Again, that humility, that service, that being, that everything runs downward into it. Now, very good line coming up, right? The one that follows, he says, humility means trusting the Tao. That's one of my favorite lines in this little chapter. Humility means trusting the Tao. There's so much we could dig into on that one little line, right? Because what does it mean to trust the Tao, right? And one of the things that I've talked to you all about a few times, on Tuesday Taoism, is that you often see, and you see it in this chapter as well, where he uses characteristics of the Tao, right? Certain words he uses to describe how the Tao moves and how the Tao works, right? And he uses those characteristics to then describe how a great person would also be, right? So the great person, man or woman, is aligned to the Tao. So in other words, when he's using characteristics to describe the Tao, when he uses the same type of descriptive words to point out a certain person, he says that that person is aligned with the Tao. Therefore, that alignment means that the person is great, right? That is a great person. And so when we talk about what does trusting the Tao mean, well, what is the movement of the Tao? I was just talking about that a minute ago. To yield, right? To surrender, to be humble, to allow, right? To not, and as he says in the very next line, I think it's the very next line, yes, he says, thus never needing to be defensive. Now, defensive is an interesting word because when I hear that word, a corollary of it is controlling, right? When you're defensive, you're controlling, right? You're trying to exert control over something. And I think those two words could almost be interchanged, right? Never, thus never needing to be controlling, right? So, and that is that is something that is not so easy to master, right? Because we, I think, especially in modern society, in westernized society, there is a certain kind of ego pride in having control over things, right? Having control over our environment, having control over ourselves, having control over others, having control over whatever. So when he says trusting the Tao, what is very, I think, challenging for many, right, including myself, is really relinquishing that control and having that kind of just trust in the way the universe works. Ironically or paradoxically, right? Paradoxically, when you're able to do that, okay, the paradox is that you automatically start to feel more in control, right? So it's one of those things, again, which we hear, regular theme in the Tao Te Ching, is paradox, is something I've also talked a whole lot about here. Is that when you try to overly exert control, you lose control. And when you let go of control and trust, you start to gain control, right? Again, paradox and this interplay of words. Let me pause here for a quick second. We're only halfway through this thing. I want to get into the next half, but just let me allow a word from a sponsor and I will be right back. All right, you all, thank you for your patience. I am back. I just want to take a quick moment here and tell you that if you ever want to ask a question, you want to make a suggestion, express a concern, or give me an idea for a future podcast episode, you could always email me at elucidatethereal@gmail.com, or you could come on over to the YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, search for Dreams Warp, two separate words. Find any one of the videos, doesn't matter which one. And post a comment under there, say, hey, I just came over from your podcast, had a comment, question, concern, or suggestion. And also, I recently opened up a Twitter account, and I am posting things there and retweeting some good stuff every day. They serve as good little reminders, nudges throughout the day to focus on your practice, awaken, monitor your breath, things like that. So make sure you follow me on Twitter to get that good stuff as well. And finally, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, if you could take a moment and just leave a nice rating and review, that would be great. It's another wonderful way to support the podcast. Okay, so we talked about humility. We talked about trusting the Tao, and we talked about relinquishing control. And now we're going to get into the next part of this, where he says a great nation is like a great man. Whenever he makes a mistake, he realizes it. Having realized it, he admits it. Having admitted it, he corrects it. He considers those who point out his faults as his most benevolent teachers. And here comes my other favorite line. He thinks of his enemy as the shadow that he himself casts. That is just so good. And if you've listened to a lot of spiritual teachers throughout the years, as I have, this is a theme that recurs quite a bit, okay, regardless of which teacher it is, is you often hear it said that when you run across someone who you find yourself in conflict with, right, somebody who has a personality trait that you can't stand, somebody who just rubs you the wrong way, you know, has some kind of habit that just drives you crazy, most of the time, it's a reflection of something within yourself that you hate, okay? And I think that this is part of why we have relationships and we experience conflict in relationships, is to learn about ourselves, to work through things that it's almost as if you use the relationship to gain a greater awareness of your own workings and your own relationship to living, right? To increasing awareness. And all relationships, I mean, really all relationships, I don't care how healthy they are. In fact, it's part of a healthy relationship is to have every once in a while some conflict, some things that come up, because that's how you grow closer. That's how you evolve and change together. I've been married now for 13 years. And there are times where, you know, my wife and I, we've had, you know, our differences of opinion, but we always talk it through. We always learn. And that actually fuels our intimacy. It fuels our growth together. So it's important here when he says in this line that if you have an enemy, right, recognizing that the enemy is the shadow that you yourself cast. And this holding this perspective gives you a very, you know, different outlook on how to use that conflict to fuel your practice. In a sense, it's another form of alchemy, right? Of taking some suffering, taking some difficulty, and using it to fuel your own drive for awareness, for awakening. So it's very, very good line. And then he goes on to say, if a nation is centered in the Tao, if it nourishes its own people and doesn't meddle in the affairs of others, it will be a light unto all nations in the world. So again, we see this recurring sort of description that I was talking about earlier in this line. He says, if a nation is centered in the Tao, and he says earlier in this chapter, trusting the Tao. We see many chapters where he talks about this aligning with, trusting, centered, right? So one thing that as you read this book, and trust me, if you read this book in one sitting or you read it, you know, more in a more concentrated way, you're definitely going to realize that understanding, not mentally now, but understanding this, the movement of the Tao, the alignment with the Tao, it becomes very, very important if you're going to be using this as a way to work on yourself. You will find that discovering the ability to align with, that is really one of the most profound things. And that is something that we are all working on doing, is aligning with the Tao. And I think, you know, I think it was the last Zen stream. It was the very last Zen stream where I was reading out of a Thich Nhat Hanh's book, and he uses that metaphor of the tree. And I thought it was a very good metaphor. If you didn't hear it, in a nutshell, it's basically saying that the leaves and the top branches of a tree in a storm, right? They're moving all around. They're blowing off the tree. Maybe the branches are breaking. But the lower you go and then you get into the trunk and the roots, it's very, very centered, right? And so he uses this metaphor to describe us as human beings, as our thoughts and our emotions are somewhat like the leaves and the branches, right? When there's a storm going on in our lives, our thoughts can go crazy, our emotions can go crazy, but hopefully we have something beyond the thinking, beyond the feelings and the emotions that centers us, that anchors us, and that grounds us. And that is something that is really, when we use language to try to describe what that is, it always falls short, because language is basically auditory thoughts, right? It's thoughts that we're putting into words, and that's why it always falls short. And I think that many people nowadays, and really for a very, very long time, we almost try to live our lives through our thoughts. We put a lot of stock into our thoughts. And many people I've even heard say, you know, your thoughts create your world, your thoughts define your reality. And I think thoughts are basically like the tip of the iceberg, right? There's much more that goes into the manifestation of your world and your experience and your reality. Thoughts are just, again, the tip of the iceberg. So what is underneath that tip, right? It's that, and I love how in the yogic tradition and in Zen as well, they put a lot of focus on the area right around the navel. And this is something that I spoke about also in the Zen stream recently. And being able to have it be part of your practice to put attention on that spot on a regular basis, monitoring your breath, this kind of anchors you. And in a sense, this is part of that process of aligning with the Tao. The more you get out of that chatty thinking mind, because the thing is, right, if you're living through your reality, through your thoughts, what's the nature of thoughts? Well, thoughts are kind of flaky. They're kind of fickle. You know, they go one way, then they go another way. You know, something happens, you know, thoughts just pop into your mind. And that's why I'm not a huge proponent. I mean, there's a time and place for everything, but I'm not a huge proponent of thinking your way out of thoughts. Right? You say, oh, don't think like that. Think like this instead. Okay, well, let me change the way I'm thinking. Let me stop how I'm thinking. Let me counter those thoughts with these thoughts. And you usually just end up getting more and more lost in your thinking. And so I think thoughts have their place. We use them like tools, right? And they serve us. But at some point, we need to connect to something that is more stable, right? More of a calming presence, more of an anchoring type of energy. And I think that as we're able to do that, we start to really have a living, breathing experience, a real living reality of what it is like to be aligned with the Tao, what it is like to be, as he says here, trusting in the Tao, centered in the Tao. All these things point to that same kind of anchoring process. And that's something that I put a lot of, personally, that I put a lot of faith into. And that's why my practice is not really about controlling my thoughts. Like I said, time and place for everything. There are some pretty good techniques that can help you with your thoughts. You know, there's nothing wrong with learning those. But that's not the whole enchilada, so to speak. Okay, that's not the whole thing. Again, that's the tip of the iceberg. We want to go beyond the thinking, beyond even the emotions, and find that centering place, that anchor. That is really the alignment. So wonderful, wonderful chapter as usual. I hope that you got something out of it to help you in your practice for today. Remember, again, if you want to reach out to me, just email me at elucidatetherial or find me over on YouTube, leave a comment, or you could message me on Twitter. That works as well. Really want to thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned. I'll be back later this week with another episode, and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.